Hello again from Holden Village. Today is June 26th, the year 2000. And in the Creekside Room, Eunice Scarf does a session called Writing Memoir, Recording Your Inheritance, The Blank Page, The Act and Art of Writing the Self, I. This tape is SCE 2000-1. Now let's join Eunice for today's session.
We're in a Lutheran-sponsored setting, and because of that, I will give one Lutheran example, but I don't assume that all of you have Lutheran origins. I want you to ask yourself, what are your origins? What is, and today we're going to look at religion, what is the religious experience of my childhood, if any? When I started asking this question, I said, where is my Norwegian Lutheran third generation experience on the page? And I couldn't find it. Are any of you third generation Lutheran, Norwegian? Second generation?
Scandinavian?
Swedish. Oh, Swedes will count them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Think. You know, where is our story? All right, the reason I look at the Norwegian is because that's what I know and not because that's what I'm trying to privilege. And when I started looking, I found a novel written in 1928. Had my grandfather been alive in 1928, he would have seen his world on the page. Mm-hmm. You know what that novel is? There is one magnificent text written out of the Scandinavian immigration to the Midwest with a huge emphasis on religion. A minister comes to visit the people in this novel, and I read and read and read and thought, what's the sermon he's going to preach? If you were going to write a novel with Lutherans preaching a sermon, what would it be? What would the text be? Well, anyway, first let's get the novel. What's the novel? Does anybody know? 1928, Giants in the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, there were giants arose out of the face of the earth, is in Genesis. And that's the verse out of which the novel title comes, Giants in the Earth. And the main character, Barrett, who comes from Norway, covered wagon, over to what seems to be South Dakota, every day thinks there's giants. Every day thinks there's giants in the rising up off the horizon. You know, she's never seen anything except a mountainous terrain. And she begins to go, we're just warming up here if you're coming in. She begins to go, not mad, but her behavior is not well. She climbs in the trunk, the old wooden trunk, every day, puts the cover down over her out of fear. Enormous fear. And the scripture and her belief and her faith is not enough to comfort her. And the minister comes. And he's the one that gives the people in the small community advice on how to treat Barrett. That's the only text that I found, that is Giants in the Earth, that documents my people. I'm not saying it's your people, but I'm asking you, where is your people documented? On what page, in what text? It's this kind of question we're going to be asking as we write. Each one is self-contained. You'll be invited to write in response to a question or a catalyst that I'm going to give you. I'll spend about 10 minutes giving a catalyst every day. And then you're invited to write for 15 or 20 minutes, probably 15 today, right here on site. Nobody's going to see it. Nobody's going to hear it unless you choose to read aloud from it. Nobody's going to know what goes on the page except you. There's no English teacher to mark it with red pen. There's no grades. You don't have to turn it in. It's first draft. A lot of writing workshops or things that emphasize writing ask you to bring in something and then we'll tell you what's wrong with it and you'll feel really good. And you'll go home and fix it. And then you can bring it back and we'll tell you how you can improve it again. There are writing classes like that. Have any of you ever taken one? Are you in recovery from such a class? I spent my master's degree in such a class. I think I teach the way I teach because of that experience, which is not the final draft to have everybody tell you what to do with it, but the first draft we do together, and then you take it away if you want to re-enter it and make it larger. So, to go back to our question, which I started with when there are a few of you here, is where is your story of your religious origins, your religious tradition, your religious experience, from a very inner spiritual life to an external institutional life in a church? Where is that? In any text. And then my next question is, if you haven't found it in a text, then it's the day to start writing it. I was thinking about what I called this today, which is the blank page, the act and art of writing the self. And I started thinking about self and community because of Bob's discussion this morning of the traditions looking at a people, the traditions looking at individuality. And I thought I could just as well call this, where is my story? Where is our story? Where is it? Do we wish to be invisible and hidden? And I say we, who's we? Who am I referring to? That is, those of us in a religious tradition. It is as much the subject of text and the outside world as any other story. You know how many books are published every year. We have music. Religious traditions have always been a massive contribution in music, have they not? Art, a massive contribution. I'm thinking of hundreds of years back and contemporary. In my own story, Chris Johnson, whom many of you know or sang with or heard sing, and what he wrote was the greatest influence in music in my story. And I asked him, what is it in yours? Christy Ilvesauer, who's a family you may know of if you're from my tradition, and the painting she's doing in Norway now, something to do with relocation and loss and longing and grief from those who came. She re-immigrated to Norway. So I asked you in your tradition, what are the arts doing? We are inviting, I'm inviting you to do story in any class you come to. And the means we're using is ready. We could be dancing story, we could be sculpting story, we could be painting story, we could be stitching story, we could be singing story. All of those express our experience. But we can't do all of those. So I ask, if you wish to enter into your story or look what is my story, in what tradition do I stand? In what experience do I stand? What's the ground of my story? We'll use writing this week. So it's not about spelling, punctuation, paragraphs, transitions, and introductory sentences, all of which of you have memory of an English class. It's about just getting down on what you know. I'm going to make that a kind of introduction. I spent a lot of time thinking today, where is the expression of what we know to be the case? While you're here, when we write, you are free to write anything you like in the time that we've got. There's no assignment whatsoever. I will give you a reading every day that will serve, or I hope will serve, as a catalyst. That is to open up, to show you several doors you could open and go this way, in either your memory, what you've experienced, or your imagination, what you'd like to invent. And you'll get as much down as you can in the 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes. And then anyone who would like to read aloud what he or she has just written is free to do so. We all have exactly the same amount of time to prepare for this writing, like about a split second. So we all start at the same place, which is no preparation, just enter into memory and experience. And if you'd like to read, you'll be invited to read. The only thing we do with your reading is to say thank you. So if you can stand that, that's as threatening as speaking aloud will be. To say thank you, to say thank you, to say thank you, to get a chorus of voices speaking out of our collective experience of those of us sitting here. I want to say one or two other things. I'd said recording your inheritance. To me, story that we've inherited is part of our inheritance, and part of the legacy we leave is our story. So I see this as both we've received a story in a cultural tradition, a story in a religious tradition, a story in a family tradition, our own personal lived story. We receive these stories. What are you going to leave? You have a legacy, a very painless, very inexpensive legacy you can leave, which is a printed page of your story for those who come after. One or two other things before we start. I sometimes call this search and rescue writing, saving your story, saving your life, and saving your life in the sense, of course, and save on the computer, but also gathering together the fragments of your life story is a life-saving activity that you integrate and set aside beside each other, acknowledge. Kristjana Gunnars, an Icelandic writer, says, to write is to admit. I admit. This is what is. This is what happened. This is what I saw. This is what I feel. This is what I know to be true. So that's a little bit of background. A little bit of explanation for why I'm going to choose the passages I read today, because two of them come from religious tradition and people writing about that experience in their childhood. And you'll be invited to write that, or I'll give you one or two other choices. I want to say that when you go into story, any story is often accompanied by tears. Where there's tears, there's story. Where there's story, there's tears. So just for the record, if you're writing and have tears, if you're reading and have tears, we just assume you're dealing with a story where tears are appropriate. Nobody gets comfort. You get one free tissue, then you have to pay for the next. And nobody gets comfort. Nobody gets processing of that. We don't attempt to give you advice, attempt to make you feel better. Tears are a normal accompaniment to going into memory. And if they happen, this is the appropriate place for it in a story writing setting. All right, need to know now how many of you have paper, because I'm going to read something and then we're going to do our writing. First, any questions on anything? You want to know how to write the best-selling American novel? I don't know. Any questions? Each day will be the same. I'll read a passage or two from fiction or prose or memoir and say, you can try this. What does this stir in your memory? What does this stir in your imagination? Write anything you like. You're here. We write together in solitude, but not alone. And we're here to hear each other's words if you so choose to read afterwards. The last thing I want to say, I keep saying it's the last thing, is that hearing each other's stories creates community, of course. And by reading before the end of our time together, day by day, hearing a line by line of somebody else's story, you inevitably create community where story is heard and told. I've begun to think that every religious tradition has somewhere the mandate to love your neighbor, but I haven't quite figured out how we love our neighbor unless we know their story. So there is an ulterior motive in listening to each other. It is that we hear, we create greater intimacy, greater awareness of who we are, no matter what group gathers together to write. How many of you need paper? So this is the pause to get our... All right, there's several things to choose from. This is squares of, if you're a very linear, careful person, you want lines, go for this. And then, of course, at Holden, what do they give you is recycled paper. So I don't know what's on the back of these other papers you're going to get. I was hoping you'd pass on a little bit. I'm giving you chunks here, but pass that out a little bit. Now, there's some pencils here. I thought I'd gotten pencils. And I'll leave extra up here, so, and the book over there if you need to write on something. When you do this kind of writing, thank you. You can have a notebook that you write in. Yes, that works. You could also have scraps. You file them in there. Margaret Atwood says she has scraps of writing. Most of her early writing is done on napkins or music concert programs. And you just put them in files. You know, today I'm writing about the origin of my religious tradition. You get a yellow file, and you put those sentences there. You may add some more scraps to that later. But it doesn't matter today if you don't have a pretty notebook with a shiny cover that are designed for writing in. You know, that does not matter. This will do. First draft is raw. You don't know where you're going to go. You don't know what you're going to find there. I give you a little bit of a guide with this reading, but you're really free to choose. One catalyst, okay, the first catalyst is going to be the same every day, and that is if you don't like what I read, and you don't want to write what I suggest, which is fine, a foolproof backup catalyst is to write yourself what you did upon waking this morning, everything you thought and said and saw and smelled and did from the moment of waking. I promise you that'll take you 6 hours to do the first hour. So there's your backup. You've all got that one. And write about yourself in third person. She woke up to the sight of a deer out her window. That's me. She lay there wondering, was that the first bell or the second bell? Where is the clock? All right, that's your first invitation. Every single time we write, that'll be your backup if you're with me another day, to write the morning time.
And interestingly, why the third person?
To practice a technique in writing. because I come so easily. Try something different. Look at yourself. See what happens if you do, for fun, for pleasure. Mm-hmm. You're always free to refuse and write it in first person. You say, I woke up this morning, put in brackets, I refuse to write in third person. This is the kind of writing where you can throw in a lot of brackets. If you're writing along and you think your neighbor is much more fluent than you are, you put in brackets, she's writing so much so fast, I bet it's better than mine. You know, that voice that's always going on. You can even multiply. All right, these are the two prompts I'm reading you from published pieces in my search for writers who are writing of their religious origins. Can we just pick that as a topic today? We may do some of it tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll be on to something else, I imagine. And this is a piece by Peggy Vaught, and I'll just invite you to listen and use her first line as your first line. That is not plagiarism. Borrow it. The church of my childhood was small, but the experience was huge. I'm just going to stop right there and model how we do that. You could write, the church of my childhood, and that's your opening four words. And then listen on to hers, and then I'll invite you to write your own. The building itself sat on a corner lot, unpretentious, with no spire, no stained glass, just a rectangle of white stucco so brilliant in the Texas sun that the men pulled their hats down to shade their eyes as they approached the door. Women looked like they were saluting, their hands rigid across their foreheads to cast shadows from the eyebrows down. We children screwed our eyes into tight squints. There were few of us in the church of my childhood. Brother and sister Brown, he with a stooped walk and she with hair so thin that I could see her scalp. Their daughter, Sister Glisson, and her husband, Brother Glisson, who always drove the latest Ford model and wore expensive clothes. Their teenage daughter, Linda, had a slight build. Then there was the Sadler family, poor and smelly. Mrs. Oswald, a widow who trailed sachet. Those were the people in the church of my childhood. All few of us clustered up front, filling the first three pews in order to keep from feeling like we were rattling about in too much space. My mother led the singing. At home, my mother worked hard, stayed quiet, and kept herself invisible. But on Sunday mornings, she stood in front of the congregation in her homemade print dress, smiling with composure as she found her list of songs. She raised her head and looked over the small crowd. Her sweet voice announced the page number with a firm, steady timbre. Her voice was immediately drowned by the rambunctious prelude of the piano. Sister Buchanan pounded the piano keys. Her wrists arched. The walls shook. We, the congregation, watched my mother's mouth for our cue to start singing. When her mouth opened, we blasted forth, "Onward, Christian Soldiers," or "I Love to Tell the Story." I was glad my father was not up there. He was beside me, belting out his monotone, the vibrations of my ear stopping his flat sound before it went any further. When we were in church, everyone sang with such gusto that even my father lost his self-consciousness. The sea of voices singing unleashed a wave of triumphant sound that swept me up and spun me into the universe where I whirled and tumbled and frolicked among the clouds, the stars, the sunbeam, the rainbow arches, until the singing stopped, the rustle of hymn books returning to their racks quieted, and I landed again with a plop on the wooden pew beside my father when the music ended. And then the preaching began. Do you remember sitting in a pew, in a chair, with parents, with music, with singing? Can you name who was there, how you felt, what they did? Do you have memory of that place in your childhood? And did all of you convert at age 21? And none of you ever set foot in a church before that date? Can you go back, the church of my childhood? If you didn't have a church in your childhood, can you go back to friends who did have one? And did they take you? And what did you think? And did you visit? And did someone try to sort of rescue you from this unbelieving household? What is your experience? Can you write of it? If you want to start with where the preaching begins and write the sermon that you remember hearing, that's okay. Anything that has to do with... It's easiest, I think, to pick a Sunday, what you did on Sunday. I'm going to give you one or two possible entries. And speaking of Sunday, the next line, this one's from Emily Carr, a painter in Canada. It's her first line of her memoir, Emily Carr. Her memoir begins with a line which opens up Sunday memory as well, and that line is, "All our Sundays were exactly alike." If you were to write that down, what memory does your day of worship bring, Sabbath or Sunday? What happened then? What happened then? What happened then? And one more, and this is from Jean McKay, whose name is on the board. One more about that world of the church, and then you can begin. This is by a minister's daughter of a United Church. And in Canada, United Church, which is where I live now, I was brought up in Seattle. In Canada, United Church was a combination of churches on the prairie in 1928 because there weren't enough preachers to spread around on the prairie. So the Methodists and, am I right, the Presbyterians? Anglicans. Methodists. Well, that's not right. Two of them joined. I believe it was the Methodists and the Presbyterians joined and became United Church. So there is an institution called the United Church joining these two traditions because they didn't have enough circuit riders to cover the prairie. And this is a memoir by a woman remembering a United Church minister father. By the time we lived in Vancouver, I was old enough to be interested in my father's sermons. I liked hearing what he was going to say as much as anybody else did. After the last hymn, he'd raise one hand and smile and say, "The benediction. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." Hands, please, if you've ever heard those words before. Hands. I had never seen them in a story, in a memoir, in a fiction before I saw them here. Why haven't we been telling our story? Why doesn't it exist in a dozen texts, is my question. It was the smile that got me. I'd seen plenty of other preachers do a benediction, and there was always something phony about it. But my father stood there looking at that whole crowd of people in his congregation as if he really liked every one of them. I came away feeling good, happily confusing his countenance with the Lord's. I thought my father must look just like God. And that's all. Now, please, begin. Date your day, please. I believe it's the 26th of June, the year 2000. What do you have to say about where you came from? And we'll write for no more than 15 minutes. And the only rule is that you mustn't let your pen stop moving. So if you need to start making a grocery list for when you go back home, do it, but don't let me see the pen not moving. You can change subject in the middle, you can interrupt yourself, you can talk back to yourself, but the pen keeps moving.